your fault. Baby, it's not mine. Not chance we're crossing the same roads all at one time. Even if you see it coming, no time to play out gracefully. One thing I know for sure, be no doubt when you see you are. Grass make dab in the middle of it. Grass make dab in the middle. We are grass make dab.
Secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler. Charlotte Littlefield is off this evening. Well, we've had some violence up in Charlottesville, Virginia. Earlier on, a group that had organized a rally entitled Unite the Right, made up of Ku Klux Klan, white supremacists, conservatives, and other people that were on the right, you know, were holding a rally there. Well, they had these counter-protesters that showed up, and Antifa and those kinds of groups and other groups were there, and they finally, the police, early in the afternoon, early afternoon, the police kept the two groups apart fairly well. There was some pepper spraying going on and so forth. And finally, they evacuated the white group, and what was left was the counter-protesters. Well, finally, they cooled it down. There were some problems going on in street fighting between individuals, but no big violence broke out. Until down a narrow street, a car pulled down at a high rate of speed and crashed into and plowed through about 19 to 20 people. And one person was killed and 19 approximately were injured. It backed up. There's video on it. We have it up on our site now that you can watch. But the car backed up. It looked like that as it was plowing through people, it eventually ran into the back of a car and bashed in the back trunk area of that car. Then it reversed and sped off. We don't know if the driver got away totally. The details are sketchy at this time, but we'll have more towards the end of the program and give you an update. Right now we have a comment made by our president. We don't know if he was fully informed about this at the time, but right now he's talking about Charlottesville in general. We don't know the times came on this speech, and did he give the speech after the car plowed through the crowd or not. But right now we have that coming up right now.
We have to come together as Americans with love for our nation and true affect, really, and I say this so strongly, true affection for each other. Our country is doing very well in so many ways. We have record. We have to come together as Americans with love for our nation and true affection, really, and I say this so strongly, true affection for each other. Our country is doing very well in so many ways. We have record, just absolute record employment. We have unemployment, the lowest it's been in almost 17 years. We have companies pouring into our country, Foxconn and car companies and so many others. They're coming back to our country. We're renegotiating trade deals to make them great for our country and great for the American worker. We have so many incredible things happening in our country. So when I watch Charlottesville, to me it's very, very sad.
Later, after this event of this car plowing into the crowd in Charlottesville, Virginia, you had certain security experts testifying on Fox and other newscasts. And they were saying that in some demonstrations or the control of crowds in certain areas in downtown areas. They would block off streets where no cars could enter in, where people would be on the sidewalks and everything. Of course, this is 2020 hindsight right now, after this has gone down. There were other reports too by progressive liberal press out there that are giving sort of a tint of a white supremacist tint to this. And because of this final event of the death of this one individual and others being injured by this car plowing into them along the sidewalk and everything. And so you have different reporters coming in from the right and reporting it from the left or the right. And so, but you know, when Barack Obama was president, he created a certain division between the left and the right. And I believe that he helped set up some of the dynamics that are happening today. We have a very, very divisive country. We have the far left against the far right and everybody in between. And so it's not good. And it's very easy to blame the Ku Klux Klan, and I'm not supportive of them at all. But it's easy to blame a group like that or white supremacists and so forth. And but on the left, and in some of the black groups, you have some of the black supremacists too. And you have all of these different cults, almost you could call them, all these different groups. They're being funded by all kinds of money, corporate money that's being funneled into the tidelands and then being redistributed from these different, amalgamation of donation and hiding these funds and redistributing funds to some very radical groups. We're proceeding towards civil war here. And what we're seeing is the beginnings of possible civil war in the future. I think Michael Savage has made that comment recently, and other people are warning of that. And I think Pat Buchanan is voicing sentiments like that. I'm going to be interviewing Patrick Wood later on this evening, and so we're going to be getting into some of these issues also. And he's written Technocracy Rising and also Trilaterals Over Washington. So he's up in Denver, Colorado, this afternoon, and he's supposed to get back with me this afternoon for an interview. So hopefully he'll be coming up at the beginning of the second hour here. But this thing is so divisive now and dangerous. We're treading in an area now where we had the shooting up in Washington of the conservative Republican representative. Now we have this mowing down of counter activists or protesters on the streets of Charlottesville, Virginia. Boy, I am very, very saddened by this. And we should be able to, but Antifa gets out there and they shout people down that they have categorized as fascist. So they're out there also fanning the flames of indignation and provoking also. They might think that they're doing some good by keeping people from speaking like that. But maybe if nobody had shown up on the counter-activist side or counter rally side, maybe nothing would have happened because they wouldn't get the press. These far-right groups and the Ku Klux Klan, they want that press. They want that notoriety. So sometimes maybe it's best just to ignore these people and don't give them any press then. And don't help them publicize their aims and their goals then. I think that happened over the years in the past. But anyway, we'll have some additional comments on this later. And coming up next is McMaster's... Coming up next is a comment made on Alex Jones' show, InfoWars, by Stone and Roger Stone. And he's made quite an allegation, and he says he has it backed up. And what his allegation is that General McMaster, head of the National Security Chief, has been colluding with General, he was saying, been colluding with George Soros. And he says that the Israelis have verification of intercepts to that effect. They've intercepted email or whatever. And we've had rumors and allegations before that McMaster's had been in collusion with Petraeus. They are friends. Now, Petraeus is connected directly to the Bilderberg Group. He's been on the steering committee, and he's a higher-up in the Bilderberg Group. But when you start looking at the people that are surrounding, President Trump right now, the Council on Foreign Relations figures prominently in that. Later on during this hour, I'm going to have some clips played from a program and an appearance in 2006 on an Israeli talk show in Tel Aviv. And it's Rabbi Marvin Adelman, author of To Eliminate the Opiate. And he gets into this CFR, so we're going to give you some information on that later. But basically, we have a lot of CFR and these trilateral types of people and the Goldman Sachs and the Federal Reserve. I mean, there's just too many insiders that have been appointed or approved or whatever that are advising Trump, and they're not giving him the best advice. And neocons, they're all in there. There was holdovers. They've been undermining his ability to reappoint more favorable people to him. There's all kinds of problems. But anyway, what Roger Stone said is coming up. We'll play that a second, and we'll make some brief comments and then move on to the next news item.
Ladies and gentlemen, Roger Stone has impeccable high-level sources, as you know, and he's got breaking exclusive news right now about exactly who McMaster's working for. And from my research, the intel he's got shows that what's happening is illegal. It's a form of espionage. Roger Stone, please break it down for us.
Alex, I now have confirmed from a source both inside the White House and a source in the Israeli government, as well as a source in Israeli intelligence, that the Israelis have intercepted email communications between General McMaster's and George Soros, informing him of everything that is going on inside the being reorganized White House. Further, that a woman named Fiona Hill, a former Soros staffer, has been brought into the White House by McMaster with the specific job of getting control of Russia policy and defeating any effort towards detente with the Russians, going on a war footing, so perhaps we can get World War III. McMaster is proving to be the Quisling. I think he is the first among equal in the three general cabal that is seeking to grab control of the White House. As you know, General Mattis is the first military man to be a Secretary of Defense, which required a special waiver. I think a number of key Trump supporters are beginning to say, too many generals. Too many generals. The other thing I can report is that McMaster has been briefing General Petraeus on a regular basis, and Petraeus has, I am told, been briefing the Clintons on the internal operations of the Trump White House.
Roger Stone, this is what Soros does. He's infiltrated scores of governments. He's brought down more than 100. He funded the Arab Spring, the overthrow of the elected Ukrainian government. I got to say it, he's pretty close to Superman when it comes to evil. Or Lex Luthor, he used to write in articles in the 80s that he believed he was the Christ, the messianic leader. People can search engine that George Soros worried he'd be thrown into lunatic asylums, what pulls it up. But George Soros thought he was the Messiah, and you'll get mainstream articles. And I got to hand it to him. I mean, as for being a Nazi collaborator when he was 14 to 18, rounding up thousands of Jews when he was 14, making them trust him and then shipping them out to be killed after robbing him, and then right through his life, pure evil, and joining with Islam and flooding Europe, he's a false flag factory. As Tyler Durden has written He is amazing. You have to hand it to him.
Well, and Alex, I'm watching what's going on at the Central Florida Post. Central Florida Post is a small, independent, libertarian-oriented website that's done extraordinary investigative reporting. And when they learn that George Soros essentially purchased the state's attorney, that's the prosecutor, in Seminole County, and that she went on an anti-death penalty jihad, this was exposed, whereupon the threats of legal action and physical threats against those watching the Central Florida Post and the immediate rain of fake news tags and other attacks online are amazing. That George Soros' machine and his lackeys would spend this kind of money and effort trying to kill a fledgling libertarian website put together by a bunch of millennials really tells you how threatened they are.
That's right. Exactly. That's why they're so committed, because they've committed such incredible crimes worldwide. Their back is now against the wall. They're fighting for their lives. They've called it a death battle. Thank you so much, Roger Stone. Look forward to the intel you get at this key meeting of the new group, the 45 group. Stay with us.
I tell you what, Alex is doing some of the best reporting of anyone out there. And he's right on top of it. And Roger Stone is a stand-up guy, and he tells it like it is. He's got a lot of detractors, and he's coming under criticism from a lot of different people. But as far as I'm concerned, I've done 3 interviews with him. I've met him 5 or 6 times at different conferences and so forth over the years. I'd have to back Roger Stone over most of these people that are criticizing. He's really a stand-up guy. Well, coming up next is... gosh, let me tell you, in setting this these clips up here in a second, is that Rabbi Marvin Adelman, back years ago, wrote a book, To Eliminate the Opiate. And the book goes back a ways back, but it's well, well documented. And one thing about Marvin Adelman's book is that he begins to tie things together. He was a rabbi in Boston at the beginning of the build-up to the Vietnam War, and he began to see that there were black groups and black leaderships of some of these power groups that were beginning to intimidate some of the local Jewish individuals for property or free rent or whatever. And they were giving in to these black groups because they were afraid of them, see. And he began to take a snapshot of that and said, huh, I don't like this. It looks wrong. Something's wrong here. So he went on a study and a research, you could say, binge, and came up with the Illuminati and all of this and the Council of Foreign Relations and so forth. So coming from the Jewish rabbi side, he's one of the guys that we can refer to or reference to, because he does come forth with some very, very insightful things. The Sabbateans, which was a group that was a sect that sort of sprang up within Judaism, and it became a threat to what he believes is that Judaism itself was broken up into the Reform group, and then the Conservative group, and the Orthodox group, and that these three general groups today were intentionally divided up from a, you know, basically Judaism itself, basically, just plain and simple. And so he believes that the detractors of Judaism took Judaism and broke it up into these Orthodox, Reformed, and Conservative groups intentionally to destroy the goodness in Judaism. And so that's basically his idea and his thesis to this book, To Eliminate the Opiate. But when he starts unfolding in this book, he'll get into some of the origins of communism in France and Germany and so forth, and Marx and in England there, and sort of give some background on that. So he does give some amazingly insightful things in this book. You can get this book online, I believe, on the internet. So To Eliminate the Opiate. But it's a book. He gets into the all-seeing eye at the end of one of these clips here that I'm going to play today, which is very, very interesting, to say the least. I mean, he comes up, he's messing up some of the mystery school people in a way, because he's getting into their home territory, and they don't usually like that. So, but it's a fresh breeze, so to speak, from a Jewish source, instead of trying to listen to or trying to get a hold from these extremely right, you know, conservative right people. And this is why it has some more meaning sometimes than some of these other groups. Anyway, we're going to be coming up here with our first clip, and he's going to start off. He was interviewed in Israel, and we'll have this full 45-minute interview where you can see the full thing. I'm just going to play a few clips now. We'll have this interview on our site. It's already up and running. And so come in there and take a look at the full interview. I'm just going to make comments on about three different clips of the interview, but you'll be able to see the whole thing in its entirety. But this first one is sort of about the CFR and things like that. Here we go now.
People worship this guy, and he really merits it. I have joining me today Dr. and Rabbi Marvin Antelman. Welcome to the show, Rabbi.
Thank you very much for having me here.
All right. So for anyone who's not familiar with this man, he is a chemist, an inventor, an author, a rabbi. He's made great strides in science. He's authored two encyclopedic works. I've never met anyone who's written an encyclopedia before, so you know we're speaking with somebody very smart. The titles, let's see if I can even get it out of my mouth, The Encyclopedia of Chemical Electrode Potentials and The Encyclopedia of Thermoplastic Materials. Rabbi Antelman has a long list of inventions under his belt as well, and you can check them out at the U.S. Patent Office. And basically, he's a genius, and he's a very famous author as well for those who are trying to find out what is steering the world. Let me just tell you a little bit about what someone says about Rabbi Antelman's book, which is called To Eliminate the Opiate, Volume 1 and 2. Let me just read this for you. That was written by Billy Jack Dial, a very famous B'nai Noach leader. And basically he says, where's my second piece of paper? Here it is. He says, quote, "These books happen to be one of the most powerful resource of truth of all times. Here, Rabbi Marvin S. Antelman confronts the evil empire with the revelation of truth and defies all the conspiracy theories and transforms those theories into reality. These books will leave the reader shocked and awed as the cloak of secrecy is stripped off of the organizations and individuals who actively sought to bring harm to the Torah of God and its followers." So we're going to find out today, who are these people behind the scenes who are possibly infiltrating our organizations, the Jewish people, our media, our education, all sorts of spheres of life. Who are these people? Who can we trust? And where do you fit in this devious agenda for control in the world? And again, if you'd like to find out more about Rabbi Antelman's books, To Eliminate the Opiate, Volume 1 and Volume 2, you can go to Billy Jack Dial's website, and let me see if I can just find that address again. It is www.bnainoach.com. Let me spell that for you. It's B-N, like in November, A-I-N, like in November, O-A-C-H, .com. I'll try to put that link up on the website as well, so you can just click there and find out where to order Dr. and Rabbi Antelman's books. So, Rabbi Antelman, you were telling me before we started the show that this happens to be the time of the 250-year anniversary of the Council of Four Lands. In Hebrew, you say that as?
But I borrowed thought. Actually, it's the 250th anniversary of a special cherem, which was the next communication in the ban that they issued. And it's very, very pertinent to us today, and I'll try to bring the connection. First of all, let me say this. There are a lot of conspiracy theories out there. I'm not interested in theories. I'm interested in facts. So the scholarship over the years that I've utilized are sources that are impeccable. For example, Anthony Sutton, professor at Stanford University, wrote two books. He wrote more than two books, but two books which are relevant to what I'm going to speak about. One of his books was Wall Street and the Bolshevik Revolution, and Wall Street and the Rise of Hitler. There he goes through a lot of trouble to document the connection between the leaders of the Council on Foreign Relations, which is an acronym also for Carnegie, Ford, and Rockefeller, who provided the main funding for this.
Interesting.
And he's a professor with impeccable credentials. And then there is the late Professor Carol Quigley, who was professor of political science at Georgetown University. Matter of fact, he was even quoted when Clinton became president in his inaugural address. He quoted Quigley as one of his people that he had studied under. So Quigley was very well known. The CFR loved him, and he decided that he would do a very nice thing. He would reciprocate the love and put out a book called Tragedy and Hope. But when it came out, and it spoke so much about the CFR activities that they didn't want people to know about, they turned against him. And he himself then reassessed his position with them and wrote a book called The Anglo-American Establishment, where he claimed that a handful of people were running the world. And those two books are impeccable as source material. But there's other impeccable source material, and that is the scholarly works that were put out by professors at Hebrew University to deal with what we call the Sabbatian conspiracy, which I'll go to in one moment in our history.
Yeah, Rabbi, that was Rabbi Adelman, and he really knows his stuff, you know. I mean, they're introducing this Council on Foreign Relations and so forth and onward, and my gosh, it's amazing how much it, and also, he likes Anthony Sutton, you know, and some of the books that Anthony Sutton has written are also very, very insightful. So, we're going to be coming up here with a second clip, from, Rabbi Adelman, right now.
One of the Sufi cults were the Assassins. Why do they call the assassins some hashish? The people would have hashish, and Hassan ibn Saba, the old man of the mountain, had a bunch of people that would assassinate people. And because they had hashish all the time, they were called assassins. So he equates the Illuminati with this movement. The old Illuminati prior to the 1776 organization of Illuminati. Now, Hassan ibn Sabah, being the old man of the mountain, as he was called, had a tremendous amount of influence in Islam. And that entire Sufi cult. The interesting thing is that he set up these places where they smoke hashashin, were luscious grounds, beautiful, luxurious places with lots of grass and flowers and fruits, and virgins. So this business about the virgin and the reward was done there by Hassan ibn Sabah.
Ah, that's where they get their idea of heaven from.
Right.
Huh.
That's where that came from.
Interesting.
You know. But this is all in Spencer's Encyclopedia of the Occult. He himself, Spence, the author, was a Rosicrucian. That's another Sufi group. I don't want to go into the Rose Cross. That's where that came from.
So you're saying that there are all these different organizations. One is the Sabbatian cult, which are Jews that were kicked out of Judaism. There's the Illuminati, which were not Jews. They were Gentiles who had their own little secret thing. You've got today Skull and Bones Society that we heard about with Yale University and President Bush and many famous politicians today.
Professor Anthony Sutton wrote about that in depth, too. He was the one that I just quoted earlier as being the author of Wall Street and the Bolshevik Revolution, and Wall Street and the Rise of Hitler. So Anthony Sutton has written about that. He has a separate book out on that. Now, I can tell you that in my two volumes, I start showing straight lines from the Illuminati and the Frankists, the Haskalah movement, the Jacobin Society, the Reform movement, and different years that initiatives had. The Illuminati were involved to destroy the Bible and the biblical authority and to help promote biblical criticism in the university level.
You know what, let me stop you here because we have to take a break for the news, and then you can go over and explain this all to us, how everything adds up today and where we are today in world politics and policies and agendas and who's running things.
Yeah, Rabbi Antelman has always been concerned about this biblical destruction group. Yeah, but there's other, on the front of his book, Volume 1, he had basically the dynamics of how they're attacking the Bible. And I found that to be very, very interesting over the time that I've read the book. And I've never been able to interview him. I talked to him once in Tel Aviv one time. But he's quite a scientist. He's very, very busy. And so, anyway, we're going to come up next with this final clip from Antelman. And it's a sort of a summation, a quick summation of what he was trying to say. But that's coming up right now, so listen carefully.
We've covered basically the roots of these different organizations. You said, again, there's the Illuminati that was from Europe, and they were not Jewish. They've got this broken-off cult of people who left Judaism and became Sabbateans, and that's what a lot of people talk about, today about the New World Order. You had something on one of your on one website where you were talking about the dollar bill and the symbols on the dollar bill of the Illuminati, who are not Jewish, the pyramid and the eye, all-seeing God. What can you tell us about that?
Yes, there's a fellow by the name of Spencer many years ago came out with a book called The Cult of the All-Seeing Eye. Interesting enough, the Illuminati had a symbol, and that was an eye on top of a pyramid, which came from the Avodah Zarah, the paganism of ancient Egypt. Like Horus, and we ourselves have Baal Peor. We're coming up soon with Parshat Balak about Bilam, who's referred to as Shtuma Ayin, which they say was blind. But Shtuma Ayin, in my opinion, was he was the cult master, the all seeing eye in his day. So this is an ancient symbol that came and is associated with the Illuminati.
What's with the Jesuit priests or the Jesuits or something?
Here's what it is: Weishaupt himself was at Ingolstadt University, which was a Jesuit college. So Illuminati, the Bavarian Illuminati, was founded in Ingolstadt, which was run and dominated by the Jesuits. Some people say that Weishaupt himself was a Jesuit, but apparently since anything I could find that was substantive, that was substantive as far as documentation was concerned, shows that he was involved with the Jesuits, but he himself was not a Jesuit.
So we've got the Jesuits, we've got the Illuminati, we've got the Sabbatians. What about the Pope, the Catholic Church, Church of Rome?
They're still doing their old thing. But as far as the Illuminati itself were concerned, the anti-Semites have taken over the Illuminati as part of the Jewish conspiracy. Domination, and they're writing about the protocols, so they lump us all together. But some of them even say that Weishaupt was Jewish. Unfortunately, there's some people who take that stuff and they regurgitate it back to us and take it as a fact. Whatever Weishaupt was, he wasn't Jewish. But even if he were, he would have been automatically excommunicated by the Vada Barotzot. The genius of Vada Barotzot meant that any Jew or a person of Jewish origin, his Jewish origin was null and void. He was outside of the pale. He got involved in these things. Like we have in Sanhedrin, for example, in Perek Chelik, the Elu She'ein Lahem Chelik HaOlam HaBa, these people do not have a share of the world to come, and they list, he doesn't believe in that the Torah was revealed by God, etc. So we have our list of heresies that go all the way back, and the Vada Barotzot was only building on those heresies.
So the Council of Foreign Relations, which is a think tank, they basically come together. It's an invitation-only type of group. Nobody off the street can join them.
No, you're right. And if you want to read more about them, there are a lot of books out on the subject. But as far as authoritative books, I would say that the two professors that I mentioned, Quigley's books are available, Tragedy and Hope, and the Anglo-American Establishment. And Anthony Sutton's two books on the Bolshevik Revolution and the Rise of Hitler, and Wall Street and the Rise of Hitler and Wall Street and the Bolshevik Revolution are there if anybody wants to do documentary studies.
So now the CFR is one think tank that you would say is trying to get world dominance. They want the world to go a certain way. They're helping to make these blocks. As I said in another show, they're helping to make this this North American Union by the year 2010. Who's involved today in the CFR that we need to worry about? Who is in the Jewish world and in the American world today that is infiltrating into politics in these countries and these nations who want to see these nations weakened and destroyed? Who do we have to worry about?
Well, there's a whole list of them. You have to get the list, which you can get on the Internet.
Do we have to worry about Bush? Clinton?
Bush's father was a member of the CFR. Bush himself is not a member of the CFR. But just about the founder of the CFR was Colonel Edward House. And the CFR was incorporated in 1921, and he founded in Versailles in 1918, and there's a British counterpart. So in the Anglo-American establishment, which was written by Anthony Sutton, he goes to great lengths to show then that the Arabs are a favored party of the CFR.
And so we have to, how dangerous are they?
Very dangerous. They want nothing more than complete domination of the world and the restoration of Plato's Republic. They conceive of themselves as the priestly and the ruling class of Plato's Republic. And they want to bring this new world society.
Do they think that they're doing this altruistically, that they're really good, or do they know that they're evil and they're just ambitious businessmen who they don't care about anybody else, they just want to have riches and power and that's it?
I don't believe it. They're monolithic. You have different personalities and they all have their own way of locking in. Some consider themselves satanic. There are other groups that interface with them, like the Bohemian Grove, which is pagan satanic.
So you're saying some of these people actually are what some people say, that they're in these devil cults, the Skull and Bones, and that...
Or they belong to the Sufi and Hastings' Encyclopedia of Ethics and Religion goes into great detail into the Sufi and its satanic theology.
Well, that sort of wraps up those three clips from Rabbi Marvin Antelman. But he's really concerned with the attacks on Judaism itself. And he went in and investigated the CFR and the Illuminati and then the Sabbatean attacks coming in, you know, from that sect that was created. And then, of course, he gets into the all-seeing eye here in that last clip, and that's on our dollar bill and stuff. And so we're under the influence of secret societies. They're not that we've never been fully aware of, and their impact and so forth. And so, and in that state of ignorance, you could say, and we've all been ignorant by degree, you could say, because we're not awake, you know, and to some of the realities that exist out there. There is a site. If you want to get a little bit better hold on your worldview, go up to Summit Ministries. And it's up in Colorado. They have a worldview chart that you can download. And this is getting to know yourself a little bit better. And you remember the Socratic saying, know thyself? Well, that's all important, really. And to address these questions and problems that we have today, whether in Charlottesville or Antelman or the CFR or the Trilateral or whatever, you've got to be able to see this and make evaluations with a thinking mind, not emotionally, see. We're quick to come up with emotional responses before. In fact, those are the first. Whenever we see an event or exposed to something that seems threatening or new to us, our first reaction is on that real basic animal level of survival, of fight or flee, see. But it's an emotional response. And what we've got to try to learn to do is let that pass for a moment or two and think, well, what really is this about? And don't come out and respond with hate and resentment immediately after experience some event that might seem harmful to you. Not that you don't want to take defense of yourself. You never want to let that down. But you've got to be careful in how you evaluate the events around you. Anyway, Summit Ministries has a worldview chart. And what they've done over the years, a friend of mine one Christmas, Bill, gave me he's up in Kerrville now. Thank you, Bill. And he's also our announcer on this program. The introduction at the beginning of our program, The Secret Truth, is Bill. And so he gave me a book called Understanding the Times. And it was back in the 90s. This was an old book. It's been expanded. I think at the time it had four different world views, and I think they added a couple of more world views to the book, Understanding the Times. But anyway, it had basically six different world views, and I'll enumerate those right now to sort of give our listening audience an idea of different kinds of views that they might have. See, a biblical Christian view, an Islam view, a secular humanist view, a Marxist-Leninist view, a cosmic humanist view, and then a postmodern view. Okay, and so this book, The Understanding of the Times, is an excellent book for going in and then trying to understand basically what your own worldview is. From infancy on, from birth, our birth, and being a child and a baby and a developing little kid, walking, speaking, and talking with our parents, we begin to be predisposed to certain ideas that our parents teach us or induce into us. See, we go to school later, we go to churches, we learn here, we learn there, Sunday school and so forth. Our friends, we talk to our friends and so forth, and we begin to formulate some kind of an idea of reality, what we call reality. See, we have this consciousness, we are a live being, and we can sense the outside world with our eyes and our skin and touch, and we can hear and so forth. And so we begin to take in all of this as much as we can, and in trying to understand this. Well, anyway, go get in that worldview chart. One of the things that we put up on our site last week was a dangerous parallels, I'll call it. And what it did was draw a parallel between John Fitzgerald Kennedy and Donald John Trump. And it's amazing some of the parallels that existed. Donald Gibson, a number of years ago, Charlotte and I interviewed him, and we replayed his interview just recently. I think it was last couple of weeks ago. But he came up with the idea and the knowledge through his research on John Fitzgerald Kennedy's assassination that the group that did this and carried it out, and it was definitely a conspiracy from the highest levels. They were in disagreement with his so-called strategy. They did not like his approach to Russia, and so they came back with this assassination. They did not like his money ideas. He was going to pull out of Vietnam, but overall, his ideas about Russia and wanting to establish a détente with Russia, that was one of the main things that they just would not tolerate. And as a result, they all got together, whether they're the mob or the CIA or FBI or all these different people at the top levels there. And some people would say that LBJ was involved. Now there's a few books out, and there's people that were part of his law firm there that advised him that would say that. Bob McClellan says that, and you can find that on my YouTube site. But anyway, the ideas here were different. John Fitzgerald Kennedy wanted to establish peace with Russia. The real movers and shakers wanted a Cold War. That's why they could make money in Vietnam, and they could continue to build weapon systems for our military and make a fortune. And that's basically what they've done over the years. See, so anyway, I had this little clip there, about 11-minute clip on our site, thesecrettruth.com. And then there's a click-off in there, too, that you can get, and it'll you can download this PDF file that printed out. But anyway, the parallels are so similar. You had both were presidents, of course. I also put in red some of the dissimilar things, see. And one thing was that Fitzgerald Kennedy was a Democrat, and Ronald Reagan was a Republican. And another dissimilarity would be that I think Kennedy was much more humble and exuded humility, where Donald John Trump is much more on the egotistical side of things. There's a difference in their education. John Fitzgerald Kennedy was highly educated through Harvard, London School of Economics and Political Science, and then Trump's education on his side has been more in business, okay? He's been more business educated at the Wharton School of Business. Otherwise, they have so much in common. And one of the things I'm thinking about is that Trump is not is strategically and worldview. They just don't have the same. The people that run things, the deep state, they just want to get rid of Trump because they don't like his worldview and the way he thinks. See, and he got rid of the TPP right off the bat, and on this global warming thing, he's not with him on that, and so forth. And so they're just fed up with him, and this is promulgated by Obama and Hillary and all those people. You know, I run into people that are blind to Hillary sometimes. They just love Hillary, and if you bring up a negative about Hillary, then you're lying. See, in fact, I was told that the other day. Basically, you know, well, what you're saying about that, that's just a lie, see. You can talk about the Clinton, you know, Foundation. You can talk about Bill's, you know, mistreatment of women, all this. But evidently, they can just dismiss it by saying, you're lying, see. But I'm not lying. There's evidence out here. There's facts, see, and to back up what's been going on in their lives. And it has not been good. They have lived a very, very, very bad life. And these people that to fight their way to the top, they'll just wipe their feet and run over. And if they happen to, they'll get rid of people, you know? I mean, that's how these people think. And if you get in their way, well, then they're going to come after you and get rid of you, see? We've had bodies falling left and right all over the Democratic National Committee, you know, lately. We've had people that have worked for them, that were serving them, you know what I mean, papers, you know, court appearances. I mean, lawsuits, and then all of a sudden they'll die. And we've got some prosecutors dying on the beach in Florida. They said, well, he shot himself, but there's no gun right there on the beach with him, see. So they just suicide people left and right. Vince Foster, you remember? He was in the White House, and he died mysteriously, too. So that's just another one, you know. We've got the Haitians down there that were mistreated by money. And Haiti, you know. It goes on and on and on. But the problem with this thing is that I believe that Trump did not appreciate the extent of the corruption. He talked about the draining the swamp, but I don't think he understood or appreciated or was aware how deep that swamp is and how big that thing is, see. I think it's taken in most of your movers and shakers. We had an interview with a while back with DC Madam, and it showed how those people up there handle their sexual needs and desires and lust, you know. And this guy was pressured to bring young people in, and he wouldn't do that. So he wound up with two prison sentences. The guy I'm talking about, the D.C. Madam book I'm talking about, is not the woman. She came later. There was an earlier book called D.C. Madam, and it was about a call boy service. He provided young men, not underage, but he provided men to men up there in Washington, D.C. And so, but he was, they were demanding more and more deals from him on the lower age group. They wanted young children, and he just wouldn't do that. And when he said, no, I'm not going to do that, then, boy, he wound up in prison soon after that, just a year or two after that, when he put his back up on that, when he said he wasn't going to do that. So these people have a way of you know, framing you up, you know, and putting you in prison if they don't like what you're doing. We've had just some information came from Judith Berry Baker. She's going to be producing the JFK conference in November up in Dallas. But she sent out a memo, and it was a very, very insightful memo. It had to do with Earl Cabell, C-A-B-E-L-L, who was mayor of Dallas at the time of the JFK assassination. And what makes this interesting is that his brother was the previous associate director of the CIA in Washington, General Cabell. And so that was very, very interesting that that was going on at the time, see. In fact, what she sent out was a was the agreement that he signed with the CIA for secrecy. It was a confidentiality agreement, okay? And so for he signed it in 1957. So this is indication that the mayor of Dallas was working for the CIA as early as the 13th of May, 1957, when it looks like that this agreement was signed. Now, when he went to work for them before the 13th of May of 1957, don't know for sure. He could have been working on a part-time basis or on a contractor-type basis before then. But it's very interesting that that was going on up there at the time. And Garrison, Judge Garrison, the prosecutor, early on in New Orleans, got on to this knowledge. And he always felt like, because the mayor of Dallas, his brother, was the associate director of the CIA around that time. Actually, what happened was, because of the Bay of Pigs, President Kennedy dismissed Allen Dulles along with General Cabell, Earl Cabell's brother. And so at the actually date of the assassination, then General Cabell was no longer associate director of the CIA, neither was Allen Dulles, but Earl Cabell was still the mayor at that time of Dallas. And so Judge Garrison down there, the prosecutor of Clay Shaw and others, believed that there was some connection between those brothers into this assassination. Now, we don't have actual proof of that, but we didn't know until this memo came out, sent out by Judith Ferry Baker, that Earl Cabell was working for the CIA at the time that that he was mayor of Dallas. And so that's a pretty strong indication that something was going on in that area. So we don't know for sure. It's hard to prove some of this stuff up. It's just very, very difficult to prove out, see. You can get, I mean, here we are, years later, 54 years later, I guess. And so are we going to ever get to the bottom of it? We need to talk about this, though. And I'll tell you why we need to talk about it, because In my clip on the parallels, the dangerous parallels between John Fitzgerald Kennedy and Donald John Trump, I believe the same people that did John Fitzgerald Kennedy in, that pulled off the assassination. I think it's the same power structure as the people that are going after Donald Trump now. I don't think there's been a change. The individuals have changed, the system, the deep state, or whatever. The deep state is the deep state, whether it was killing John Fitzgerald Kennedy or trying to bring Trump down and line him up into some kind of charges through grand juries or prosecutory types of mechanisms. So, but anyway, that's the way I see it. And it's disheartening what's happening in the country. And getting back to Charlottesville today, I mean, by God, you know, a guy drives into a crowd of people. You know, I mean, the cars are being used as weapons because the Muslims, they did it over in Europe now several times, and in England, you know, in France down there. And I mean, it's just very, very frustrating. So we've got to try to awaken to this problem. And gosh, it's not easy to do. In the circumstances, we thank you. We want to thank everyone out there. We're broadcasting every Saturday night, 7 to 9, and we're going to first hour tonight is going to be this program live now, and then we're going to be rebroadcasting the hour that we had for Jim Mars. You know, we like to run that again, because Jim Morris was a really fine person, and he deserves another broadcast, and we'll do that on the second hour. Jim Morris, God bless you, and you really were a fine person, and you really worked for truth and so forth. And Jim Morris did a lot on the JFK assassination and opened our eyes to a lot of things there, and we want to thank him. We know he's listening now, and there's going to be a wake. I think his widow is planning some kind of a wake. She said, I think, on Facebook within a month of his death, she planned on a big Texas-style wake. And I think she was planning on doing something around the house up there where they lived and where he worked. He finally became a freelance writer and published about 13 books during his later career. His earlier career, he did police reporting up there in Fort Worth, and I think he did some reporting out in West Texas also. But so he had experience as an investigative reporter, as a police reporter, and of course he had a journalism degree out of North Texas State, I believe. And then he had a master's degree also. But also he taught some courses. See, I think he taught a course for 30 years on the JFK assassination, I believe. And so he was a stand-up guy. You know, you'd go up there yearly, and he'd be around Dealey Plaza guiding groups and friends around and telling them the layout of the plaza. And George Bannerman Dealey was the plaza was named after. He was a mayor of Dallas. His father was a previous mayor. And so the Dealey family was very, very well entrenched in Dallas politics and Dallas Morning News and things like that. So I believe he had come in from Galveston before that and had worked his way up in the Dallas Morning News and eventually took that over and owned it. But that's really where he made his mark in the Dallas area. Well, we want to thank each and every one out there again for listening. And again, thesecrettruth.com. I'm George Butler. Charlotte Littlefield Brown is my co-host. We've been on the air now for about, well, it'll be 11 years in November the 1st, coming up this next November. We've been trying to cover some of the larger news events over the years. But we're still doing this regularly each Saturday night. And here lately, we've been having one live program, fresh program, and then we'll add in either a rebroadcast or a second live program if we have the events to either cover or so forth. Again, we want to pray for those people that were hurt up in Charlottesville and pray for that family that lost their next of kin up there. These are tragic times, and we just hope and pray that this country will not come apart, and that we can keep it united, and we can work this through this thing called forgiveness. That's what I've been talking about for a long, long time. If we can begin to forgive ourselves and others, then we can come out of this delusion, this deluded state, and that's saying a lot, I think. But anyway, thank you for listening tonight, and we'll be back next Saturday. Thank you. Good night.